What was that?
That's a little sound I told you about that it was going to make.
Oh, I thought that was like a bleep, as you said. I was like, wow, that's sophisticated software.
That's just the little sound that
voice recognition.
Yeah.
Auto bleep.
Oh, man. Okay, so all that recorded. Hello and welcome to WNGS Radio, Episode 2. I'm your host, Dion DeGennaro. You can find me on Twitter at TheDukeNGS. And today is going to be our first talk show format where we kind of talk about issues pertaining to lower league soccer and relate them back to Detroit City FC and why you should give a fuck about them. So today I have with me Andrew Good. Andrew Good is the writer and creator of Boys in Rouge. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you. First time, long time listener, first time caller.
Yes, we have a storied history, and I am happy to finally have you in. We're going to talk about a lot today. We're going to talk about the NASL. It's either impending collapse or success. We're going to talk about what the hell NISA is, and we're going to talk about you. So actually, I want to start out by talking about you. Why don't you tell me what exactly it is that you do?
Well, I want to thank you first for that lovely introduction on the last episode. That was like the nicest thing anybody's ever said about me. That was pretty nice.
Longtime fan.
Yeah, well, thanks. So I do boysinrouge.com, and I started it right at the end of City's second season in 2013. I just had stuff I wanted to say, I guess.
Yeah, like what I guess compelled you to start writing about Detroit City FC?
So I guess I know it's kind of persona non grata, but I've read MGoBlog for a long time. So, yeah, whatever.
We won't talk about MGoBlog too much.
But that and a couple other websites. I also, Nick Hornby's Fever Pitch, where he kind of goes through his experiences through his life as an Arsenal fan.
Yep.
And I just kind of wanted to do something like that.
Like sports blogging.
But for City.
Yeah. But relate it to yourself and how you see it. That's really cool. Did you write at all prior to starting the sports blog, or was this something that you just kind of jumped off a cliff and was like, try it and trial by fire?
I guess I've always been pretty verbally gifted, but I haven't really written anything other than that. Kind of putz around a few articles here and there.
Yeah.
Other than school papers and that kind of thing. Yeah, but
That's cool. That's really cool. What was I going to say? Has it been as successful as you thought it was going to be? Like, what did you expect when you were starting it?
Not much. I just thought, hey, I could put this out here and hopefully some people enjoy it. And I think it's exceeded all my expectations,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have an idea of, like, on average, how many people read each post?
It's usually a few hundred, maybe.
Okay.
2, 3, 4.
Cool.
Depending on how...
Now, do you have statistics if people are reading it, like, in-state, or is it people from all over?
I think it's mostly U.S. and Canada, but I could go break down country by country if you want me to.
No, it's cool. I'm, like, just curious. I love statistics, so it's cool stuff to know. So I want to get to questions that people ask for you.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them, so let's get started on those. I think a good one to start off with is actually going to be Neil Rule. Mm-hmm. You can find him at Neil Rule on Twitter. And Neil asks, what is your favorite deficit to come back from?
Well, I think that's one thing. Like, if you ask the question, you already know the answer. So, of course, it's 3-0, 3-0.
That's a good deficit to come back from. You could also argue that the Cincinnati away game, what was that, 2-0?
They were down one.
They were down one,
yeah,
but
yeah.
They still had, they were down a man. Let's see. I guess I'll get the biggest question out of the way right now, too. And that one is from Eric in Louisville, at Eric_MLBC. And he wants to know what your ultimate DCFC squad would be. Full squad, including subs. Which kits you want them to wear, home and away? Probably the most specific question ever asked.
So I know I was supposed to do all my homework about the NASL thing and all the details about that. That's kind of boring. So I was spent most of my time today.
It's way more interesting.
Figuring out my best 11. I spent probably an hour on it. It's tough because there's some players who are around for just a game or two and they make a huge impact.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, how do I value them versus somebody who's been here the entire time?
So that's like things that you have to weigh against each other when you're creating the ultimate DCFC squad.
I just kind of grabbed about 30 players, put them in a pool, and I kind of picked who I think would be the best.
Your top 30, and then in positions and created a team.
So just get the kits out of the way. I mean, obviously the home 2014 hoops.
OG hoops.
They will never.
No kit will top that kit.
The ones this year are okay, but nothing will touch 2014.
Is it because nothing tops it? Is it because you can't have it? Or is it just, it's just that year, that team, that kit?
That's definitely part of it. I think the other part is just, it looked the best. It was Alex Wright said it was like a special custom,
like kit Nike, that they got. Nike special kit. Yeah. That's not just catalog ordered. It's custom ordered. Right. Yeah. So
gold numbers, the little fleur-de-lis.
The details on it were good.
Yeah, just quality all around.
Yeah. So, okay, that's the home kit.
The away, I really like the 2013 away. They had the...
Remind me which that is again. Like, is that the sash?
No, that was...
There's that 14.
They had the gold sleeves with the rouge bar across the chest.
Yes, and then the logos were red. Or gold, I think, on it.
Gold. And then they had, I love the red socks with the white shorts. I wish they would do that again. I really like that look.
Totally different. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So the small parts out of the way.
Yeah. Big part here. So I went with a 4-2-3-1. That's kind of Pierman's preferred formation, but it's also mine too.
Okay.
So I'm, of course, going to go Will Miller's Blair up top, lone striker. And for my attacking mids, I'm going to go Tyrone Mondi.
Tyrone in the middle?
I'm going to put him on the wing.
On the wing, yeah, okay.
I think I'll put Jeff Atkins on the other wing.
Okay, opposite wing.
And I'm going to put Cyrus in that number 10 role.
It's a power midfield.
Right,
It's just a very creative power midfield.
Small but brilliant all around.
Yes.
Center mid was really hard because there was probably half a dozen players.
There's so many center mids that have played for City that are good.
This may be just recency bias, like what I've seen taking precedent over things in the past, but I really thought Franco and Dargent, Aaron Franco, Louis Dargent,
that was
the
best Franco combo. I think Franco was kind of underappreciated for how good he was too and what an impact he made. Like Dargent, it was very obvious the impact that
you
he
can't
made.
Miss him. Exactly. 6'5" ginger galloping up and down the field.
Yes, just controlling the midfield. But Franco was always in the right positions and always knew where to be and then could read the passes really well.
Like we've had some good defensive midfielders, they were good at breaking up the play, but I thought he did that plus distributed brilliantly.
Forward, definitely.
His passing was excellent.
But like that Futurama quote where it's like, if you do something right, like people don't realize you've done anything at all.
And until you screw up.
until you mess up. But so that's how I would describe Franco.
Yeah, absolutely. For my back four, I'm going to do Shiwi at left back. I'm going to put Adam Bedell at center back.
Okay.
I know he played striker in MLS.
Yeah.
But when he was with us, he played center back. And I thought
he had it locked
down. He could have played pro center back. Because I thought he was really good at his positioning.
For sure. His size, his positioning.
He wasn't the fastest because of his size, but he had really good positioning. I put Seb next to him.
Okay.
And for right back was tough, but I really liked what I saw from Troy Watson this year. So
late season Troy Watson at right back was... very good.
I really liked how he played there, so I'm going to put him at my right back. And I'm going to put Evan Lauro in goal.
He played for like two games for us.
Yep. Yep. But, I mean, if you saw what he did this weekend for Red Bulls 2.
Yeah, that was absolutely insane. Like, was it late game?
Yeah.
Like
extra, or extra time, yeah.
Was it extra time? Was it in... So I didn't watch the game, but was it in like extra time halves, or was it just extra time, 90 minutes extra time?
No, it was over, like the overtime, it was 2:15. Like, okay, yeah.
2:15. So yeah, so he, and that save held the victory for him,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So always coming up big.
Right. For my subs, so I'll just go from striker to keeper. I'll do Zach Myers as my coming off the bench.
Otter.
Put Tommy Catalano up there.
Okay.
I can't.
Because of his season last year?
Maybe the one before that.
The one before that, yeah.
People kind of forget about this guy, Keith Luff. Or Lowe, I can't. I don't know.
I think it's Lowe.
Lowe.
I think it's Keith Lowe.
I like Luff, but...
that might be how you actually pronounce it.
Right.
I have no idea.
Who knows? But I thought he was a good winger and attacking mid, even though he was just here the first year.
For sure. Definitely was an impact player the first year.
I'm going to put the two captains next, Dave Edwardson and Josh Rogers. My next subs.
It is interesting that you didn't start either of them.
No.
In the main starting 11.
It was hard. I'm trying to think.
So much talent.
Yeah, it was hard to figure it out. I'm going to put Omar as my last field
sub. Yeah. Oh, man. You like Omar that much?
His free kicks, that just kind of
game changer this year. His free kicking ability that came out of nowhere.
Keeping it in the bag for the whole season. Yeah. Just busted out. Secret weapon.
And he's a really good defender, too.
Yeah, absolutely. He could play in the middle or outside.
Yep.
And my backup keeper, I'm going to go with Bujanek.
Bujanek.
Hans.
He is my favorite, my favorite keeper we've had. His positioning, his size, his ability.
His athleticism,
yeah. And he understood the ethos of the team, too. Mm-hmm. Like, he was committed. He was bought into the community of the team.
I think he's, Laurel, I think he's got an outside chance at getting capped one day.
For sure.
But I think Bujanek is a future pro, for sure.
Yeah.
At some level.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And then, do you pick Caesar as coach still too?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
of course. No, no Caesar out from you.
No, never.
Cool.
It's
like a very solid roster.
Yeah.
I think so. And there's so many guys that aren't on that either.
I have an honorable mention.
Oh, okay, good.
In no particular order. I have Sean Lawson. Tyler Arnone, he only played for a year, but people kind of forget about him a little bit.
Yeah, and he's in the pros now, too.
Mm-hmm. Latif Alache, I liked him at defensive mid.
Yep.
Bakey Goodman, of course.
Yes.
His play this year, kind of under the radar. Kevin Taylor, of course.
Yep.
I put Kervin Kenton and Stephen Carroll there. They really impressed me this year.
I love Stephen Carroll this year. He was, again, like a guy who just was always there and always came up big. He played like every game that he was here, didn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah, so.
I hate feeling like I'm just going by what I've seen recently, but I really think they were.
We had four or five all-time
great players this year.
The team this year was super, super good.
And I think you got to put Fernando Pena as another.
As a third keeper. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He definitely grew into his keeper role this year, and he was lights out all year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that's a really good roster. I like that. I like that setup you got going. All right, so next question is going to be from King of the North, Dan Marcaccio, and his Twitter name's @NGS_gigolo. GIGOLO. And so it's a couple part question. So we're going to start with what do you think the best DCFC home match has been?
I was thinking about it earlier. I know we hosted the playoffs in 2013 and those were big games, but I thought Lansing 2015, it just had a really big game feel to it.
That game was awesome.
Like the biggest game up until that point.
For sure.
Maybe since then.
Just
like the line of people outside before the game. Yep. Just stretched on forever and ever.
And that game sold out too, didn't it? Where people got turned away at the gate, mm-hmm. and they were standing on the cement columns.
Peering in.
Yeah. And plus that game was just an awesome game, too.
It just had tension because it was two really good teams.
Yep.
Pretty tense, pretty close. You had the great goal.
Equally matched. And then you had the goal.
The goal that broke Lansing.
The goal that broke Lansing.
Set them on their slide, eventually ending up in the PDL.
Yep. And then some of the best smoke ever mm-hmm. was in that match, too. Like, I think people almost died.
And people forget about that save at the end of the first half. By Bujanek.
Yeah, Bujanek had an amazing save.
Maybe the best save in city history.
It was that the one off the header?
Yeah.
And he reacted, just got saved a
fingertip
it.
On it, yeah, tipped it over the bar.
Yeah, that was a fucking awesome save. Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. That's probably definitely top three mm-hmm. city home matches. I don't know what the top one is, but that would be my top three. Okay, so what about your opinion, the best away match?
Oh, obvious for me would be that Cincinnati away 2015.
You've talked about it before.
I know, but it never gets old. Just the
whole storyline.
The whole atmosphere.
Why don't you explain it to people that might not know about that game? Like, kind of set the tone, yeah. Set the scene.
Well, that was my first out of state away game that I went to. I went down there with you and Jackie.
Yep.
We got buzzed by a fighter jet over I-75 on the way down near Dayton.
Yeah, there's an Air Force base close by there. So yeah, like a F-16 flew over.
Yeah, it sounded like a motorcycle coming up. I'm like, oh, hey, that's a fighter jet about 500 feet above us. Wow.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. So yeah, so that was interesting. And so that's before the game, that's on the way down.
It was about 90 degrees and muggy. Just
a typical sticky, horrible Ohio day.
Southern Ohio, just north of Kentucky. Just brutal heat. They had a really nice stadium. They had the concrete.
Yeah.
Like their, a J shape.
Their stadium before they moved to Dayton was probably my favorite NPSL stadium.
Yeah, it was really unique and really fun.
Yeah.
It seems like we did it every game that year. We went down early.
Yeah.
First 10 or 15 minutes, down 1-0. And then I can't remember, was it first half or second half, Cyrus got a red card.
I think that was second half.
Second.
I think it was near the 60th minute or so.
And we're still trying to figure out what happened because
there's nothing
on
happened.
Video, nothing that anyone saw in person.
The phantom red to Cyrus, who doesn't ever get any disciplinary ever.
Most mild-mannered player on the field.
Yep.
So we're down a man, down one with about... It was about the 70th minute, 75th minute.
I think somewhere in there.
And then we have ball pop out about, 25 yards away.
I thought it was even further 30. Than that. Because that's the left-footed volley goal you're Guevara's talking about.
Left-footed, weak foot volley up in the upper 90.
Probably about 35 yards out.
Yeah.
It was far. It was not an easy shot.
Brilliant goal.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was great. And there's video. You have video of that, mm-hmm. too. You have mm-hmm. a YouTube where the video mm-hmm. is on. Also, if you search up Boys in Rouge, he clips highlights and hosts them on there for his blog. So now they're tied 2-2, right?
Mm-hmm. Or 1-1.
1-1, yep.
And then just a little bit later, 5 or 10 minutes later, Danny Drugoy comes through, gets the go-ahead goal.
Oh, God.
Rips his shirt off, comes over.
Has, 18 abs.
Yep. So then we're popping smoke, and then the Cincinnati Fire Department shows up because they think there's a fire.
Because so much smoke was lit off or, popped that someone in the neighborhood thought the school was on fire.
Right.
and then the fire department showed up, and... they were driving. I remember
there were multiple fire trucks driving around.
Multiple, and they couldn't figure out where to go or where the fire was at or whatever. And then then they realized there was a soccer game going on,
mm-hmm.
and then they left.
And then was Edwardson got the last goal to cap it off?
I think he got the last one.
Just an amazing comeback.
Yeah,
down a man.
Yeah, and so all the goals were scored down a man too, weren't they?
In the last 15 minutes. Yeah, 15-20 minutes of the game.
Three goals. Boom! Boom! Boom!
Mm-hmm.
Wrapped it up, and that was a Cincinnati squad that was not that good either. But now Dayton this year was actually pretty good,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that was a great. That's probably my favorite away day.
And then we saw a UFO on the way home.
We did see a UFO on the way home, like warped in the sky, like halfway across the sky.
It wasn't like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, anything that up and close and personal, but there was something weird
just
up there.
Just like a light, a solid light that just like traveled really quickly
and disappeared for a little bit, then it came back.
Yeah, that was really weird. So definitely, I think my favorite away match as well. Dan also asks, what is your funniest DCSC story other than the UFO on the away to Cincy?
I mean, you can't really beat the fire trucks. It's just brilliant. You couldn't.
It's just so much smoke. Yeah, that's hilarious.
It was surreal and funny and hilarious at the same time, just to see that.
That was great. So when did you actually start going to City Games? Dan wants to know.
It was at game number one, May 12th, 2012.
So you've been there since game one.
Yes.
Very cool. And then, so have you always, here's another thing Dan wants to know. Have you always been passionate about soccer, or was it something you grew into? Okay.
No, I played for a little bit when I was in kindergarten, first grade.
Like everybody does.
Yep. And then I kind of just did other things forever.
Yep.
And I didn't really pay attention to soccer until I was about 20, and it was the 2006 World Cup. I just kind of read about it. I'm like, hey, I'm going to check that out.
The one in Germany?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, I'm going to check out Team USA. I'll see what this is all about. And they didn't do so well, but I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I watched some more games, and I watched the final, the Zidane headbutt game.
To have that like be your like one of your first games to watch, that's like a good
it's
a good first.
It's pretty
game.
Epic.
This is definitely going to draw you in.
Yeah. So then after that, I went and bought whatever FIFA was out that year, and I started learning
FIFA 06
teams and players FIFA. And leagues, and kind of got into it really hard from there.
Okay. And so since then, you've kind of followed soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So like 11, 12 years now almost.
Yep.
Cool. How did you, so this is just a question for me, mm-hmm. kind of following up to what Dan's questions were. How did you first hear about DCFC?
Either May or April of just before they started their first season, and there was like an ad in the Sunday paper.
Okay, like the Free Press or something.
Yeah,
like that. Okay.
I think my brother showed me it, and it was like an ad for, hey, here's $30 for season tickets and a scarf.
Yep.
And
best deal in Detroit sports.
What drew me in was the name and the branding. Like, we talk about that all the time, like how that's so important, but you can't.
Yeah, they took it seriously from day one.
Because that's what really drew me in. Because having watched soccer the year before that, I'd really been enthralled by like the European atmosphere and everything. Yeah. So if it was called like Detroit Demolition or something, some cheesy minor league, like, I would have whatever. I would have never paid attention to it again. But I thought, hey, this name sounds like professional. It looks like a crest it wouldn't look out of place in any other big European league.
Yep.
I think I'll check that out. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah. Now, had you heard of the NPSL prior?
No.
It's kind of really funny. Like, no one had heard of the NPSL.
No. And I was thinking about that the other day too. I feel like the level of play in that league from when we started up until now,
way vastly improved.
Prestige of the league with us, Chattanooga, and a lot of other teams that are doing well. It's really raised the profile.
Yeah, raised the profile, and like you said, the play has gotten noticeably better. And I think it's just because it's easier to attract talent now versus, you know, the really good guys may have went and played for like a development academy in the summer, but now you get as good of an experience playing for DCFC or Chattanooga. So yeah, I agree. That's the growing teams have kind of put that league on the map for sure. And now it's not quite a household name, but if you know soccer, you probably
have heard of
the NPSL.
Whenever you see these articles, they talk about NPSL as kind of the de facto fourth division.
Yep. Okay, so I got another question here from Mike Kulik at Southpaw_Paw Mike. I may have read that wrong. South_paw Mike.
Yeah.
He wants to know what your like favorite smoke bomb memory is.
Well, I mean, other than the fire truck.
That's always... Yeah, no, you can't keep going back to the fire truck.
It's hard. It's the best. I thought of another one. It was the last regular season game of 2015 at Michigan Stars in Pontiac.
The one where we weren't allowed to smoke, and that was, we did anyway.
That's why we did it. And you could tell that the Stars owner was very upset about it.
Yeah, he was upset, and then he was trying to get the people to like do something about it, and they're we don't really care that they're doing that, so we're not gonna stop them.
It was just a cool thing. Like, we were up in like the 90th minute, like, yeah, here we go.
Fuck it. Yeah. Do first, apologize later.
Right.
So the next thing Mike wants to know is, and I don't think this is a great question.
Yeah, I don't know.
But who do you think is the best capo?
I don't know, because
everyone has their strengths.
I don't want to disrespect anybody. Has their strengths. Everybody brings their special talents and skills to the table.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing is, like, everyone, you need everyone there. It's mm-hmm. not, you can't just rely on the best. Like, everyone's part of that team, and right. they get it done. And it's a lot harder, I think, than people realize to be a capo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work.
Oh, for sure. You have to have the personality for it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, not everyone.
I couldn't do it.
Everyone can be a capo, for sure. So to kind of, I guess, follow up to that. So what's your favorite chant?
I've always liked the "No One Likes Us." Just simple. Classic. Love it. Love just it.
Classic. I like "No One Likes Us," but this year I've fallen in love with the "Suck So Much" chant.
That's really good too.
It's so catchy and it sticks in your head, and it's easy to sing, and the whole section picks up on it.
Right.
And so it could be your first game, and you'll be able to sing it, and mm-hmm. everyone gets in on it. And actually, when we played Ann Arbor in the playoffs this year, the entire stadium was chanting mm-hmm. it. I don't know if you knew that.
Yep.
But the entire stadium was doing the "Suck So Much" chant. Oh, the supporter side and the family side, or the quiet side, or whatever you want to call it. They're not that quiet, but everyone was singing it.
That brings up, you talk about the family side, that when you do the cross stadium chant, that's...
Yeah, that's kind of a thing that's really taken
the
off,
the first
too.
Couple of times we did it at Cass, it was like... It was a goosebump type of moment there.
Yeah, definitely. Especially because the side over at Cass, there was more people even mm-hmm. too. So they would yell at you and it would just echo.
Yeah.
And so now it's just loud.
Mm-hmm.
It's just way loud. Cool. Yeah. I've fallen in love with that "Suck So Much" chant. Okay, so K. Aleman at KK Par Dark Star on Twitter. Asks, how about clarity of which teams we can support, i.e. Glentoran, which teams will never get our support, i.e. Lansing, and then he finishes it off with "fuck anything Ohio?" question mark.
Yes.
So honestly, like, I don't think Northern Guard really cares who you support.
I don't think
anyone really gives a shit who you support, as long as you're supporting City.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think people, we don't even care if people don't put City as their number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, all we care about is that if you're going to the game, you're there to support City.
I guess maybe if there's a team that's in direct competition.
Yeah.
Like
in
Ann Arbor or Grand Rapids.
Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't support Grand Rapids and Detroit City.
No.
Ann Arbor and Detroit. Especially, I don't think that would work. That doesn't work out. But honestly,
go crazy.
Yeah. Support whoever you want. I don't really get
plenty of leagues. You can have a favorite team in each league.
We're not that elitist.
No.
Where we make people support. you can't do them. No. So yeah. No, there's, in case anyone was wondering, Northern Guard does not give a shit who you support, as long as you're supporting Detroit City. Douglas LeHue at Lazarus_NGS, and quick note about how he got that name. At the U.S. Open Cup match against the Bucks at OU, we stormed the pitch, and there is a video of Douglas being engulfed by the crowd monster.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a zombie movie where somebody just gets pulled into the group, and then their face disappears
forever. So yeah, Douglas died that day.
Yeah.
And then he disappeared for a while, like a year,
mm-hmm.
and then he came back from the dead. and hence the name Lazarus. But Douglas LeHue asks, if you could ask any city player who has only played one season with us to come back, who would you ask?
I kind of talked about it earlier, but I thought Alex Bujanek.
Yeah.
He could be like our keeper for 10 years if we made the jump to a pro.
For sure. Definitely.
I think Laurel has probably got bigger aspirations. Like, you know,
he probably is going to be like a D1
somewhere keeper. In Europe. Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah, he could potentially go to Europe too. He's that good.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. So let's see, the last kind of general purpose question I have is from, I don't know their real name. I'm sorry if this is you, but Bugar, at J Gar, G U A R R. Assuming the club moves up somewhere, how ready are they to deal with more significant travel and competition? And should we expect a roster overhaul?
I think about the travel, I think we kind of, some of us talked amongst ourselves at the end of the season about how that's kind of overrated. It's not like a huge cost increase.
I could see for like a first year club and having no income, not a like revenue stream, no fans, no merch. I could see travel being an issue, but for an established team, travel is probably kind of on the lower end of what the budget is.
And honestly, if you're getting a millionaire to help you move up to D3 or D2, that's probably not a whole
big deal. No, I agree with that. I think, you know, City already has a budget. Like they publicly said, they have a $1 million a year budget, basically. Mm-hmm. So we're maybe about halfway to what a D2 would spend minus like roster.
Yeah.
in terms of budget. And if you're playing more than 8 home games a season, and you're drawing 5,000, 8,000 people, you could very easily, with City's business model, move up to a D2 and maintain and kind of self-sustain.
I think so,
too. I don't think there's a significant jump there. But what the biggest expense line probably would be is the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And the question, should we expect a roster overhaul? What do you think?
Probably to a certain extent. I think if they do like a third division jump, say NISA is sanctioned, and we'll talk about this later, which year they'll come in, but just I kind of glanced at the roster today. I think there's probably maybe 10 to 15 players who could
start
make the roster of a D3 team.
Yeah,
and if it's NASL or D2, maybe between 5 and 10.
Yeah,
just from my rough look at it.
Yeah, based on players' abilities who have played for us and also guys coming through the pipeline who are starting to graduate. There's a couple of really solid seniors that I saw a list and I don't remember who's on it, but there's a good amount of guys graduating school this year.
And there's stuff. There's some like Seb, he's got the talent for it, but it's like, hey, do you want to give
up the time? Yeah.
Do you want to give up your salary to make a lower salary?
Funny thing about Seb is he just started his own business.
Yeah, there you go.
So he could really go either way if he wanted to.
Right.
But I know he's really good at what he does, so he might not want to.
Because he probably makes more money at his job than you would as a D3 professional soccer player.
Yeah, exactly. That's just the nature of like the pay scale in this country. So would it be worth it to like someone like Seb, who started his own business and
he's got children now, so.
Yeah, he's going to have a second child, too, which he kind of told us at Socktoberfest. So congrats again, Seb. But yeah, so does it really make sense for a guy like that who's good and could break into a D3 and maybe be a sub in D2? Is it worth it for him to kind of give up his career or scale it back and start training full time and playing full time? Exactly. Is it worth it? Tough to say. I don't know. I know there's quite a few guys that would happily do that, but it's tough to say if someone like, you know, Seb would. It depends on the circumstances for each guy, but yeah. So with that being said, let's kind of roll into talking about where Detroit City could potentially move to. because there's quite a bit to talk about. This might be a good part to actually break this up into two episodes. So yeah. If you are listening and you want to hear what that's about, check out the next episode. I think we're going to split it up into two parts just because there's a lot to talk about and probably too much for one episode.
You don't want
to
have a 3-hour block
no.
to listen to.
No. Like, if you don't give a shit about Andrew,
yeah,
you just skip the first one.
It's okay. I don't take any offense to it.
But you really should listen to both because, you know, Andrew is great at what he does. So, yeah. So we'll cut it off here. And if you want to hear about NASL and NISA and the potential complete change of the U.S. pyramid, check out the next episode.